This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're going to be talking about Medi-Cal and Medi-Cal for long-term care, and in particular, the new Medi-Cal recovery laws effective January 1st, 2017. My guests are Peter Stern, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. He's a former chair of the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar of California. His office is in Palo Alto. My other guest is Patricia McGinnis, Executive Director of California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, also referred to as CANHR, C-A-N-H-R, in San Francisco. There's a very fine booklet that CANHR has put together entitled The New Medi-Cal Recovery Laws 1-1-2017. And we will give you information how you can get that, because I think if you are on Medi-Cal or if there's you may be subject to recovery, I think you need to get this booklet. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law. It's also covered by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies four areas of the law, and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Peter, are you there?
I'm here, Chuck.
This is wonderful. I hear you fine. Peter is in his office with us by phone, and Pat is with us right here. Pat, if you would start us off. Tell us, what was the law? First of all, what is recovery? I think people need to know that. What was the law? And what then I'd like both of you to tell us, what's the new law?
Well, back in 1993, the federal government decided that they wanted the states to start recovering some of the Medicaid monies that they were paying out. And where they crafted a law, part of the OBRA 93 law, that said that the states have to recover. I mean, this is a federal mandate. They have to recover certain kinds of services from certain categories of people. If you were 55 and over who were in a nursing home or received home and community-based services, or if you were permanently institutionalized, the states were required, they had to recover from that. But unfortunately, they also gave the states the option. If you, the state, want to recover from all Medicaid benefits, go ahead and do that. And unfortunately, back in 93, under then Governor Wilson, because we were again in a budget crunch, they decided to go for it all. So ever since 1994, when all these laws in California went into effect, the state has been recovering, if you were 55 or over, from any Medi-Cal services that you had, that's what they would recover from.
They could also recover from just about any piece of property, and by property I mean bank accounts, real property, just about anything except the wedding ring on your hand.
Yeah, and living trusts, joint tenancies, things like that. That none of that was exempt, and that's our organization actually sued the state of California 3, 4, 5 times. And we got federal injunctions against them because they were really overreaching even back then. Mm-hmm. But there was not much you could do when the federal government says, hey, states, you can do this if you want to. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, both of you. What we are going to be talking to this evening, and this is Wednesday, it's February 8th, 2017. Are we talking now, we're going to be talking about the new laws. We're going to be talking, however, about new laws for California. We're not going to be talking about laws that affect the rest of the United States. Is that right?
That's correct. Every state has different Medicaid recovery laws.
So in just so everybody understands what we're doing here, Medi-Cal is the name that California has used for Medicaid. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
And this is not the same as Medicare. Is that right?
Completely different program.
Not at all. Yeah.
And what about Covered California? We know Covered California. Is it the same? Is Covered California going to be involved with what we're talking about here?
Well, for certain categories of people who sign up for Covered California, they are going to be on the Medicaid program.
I see. All right.
And if they're 55 and older, before this law passed, no matter what kind of medical services they got, or even if they never even used the services, they were going to be subject to recovery.
Really?
And that's why this was such an important so important to get this passed.
With all of the thing that the president of the United States, Mr. Trump, is trying to do by doing away with the Affordable Care Act, does that have any, if that was done away with, would that have any significance on what we are talking about tonight?
Well, technically, nothing to do with the Affordable Care Act has anything to do with recovery. But, who knows?
All right.
Well, Chuck, one exception to that. If somebody is on the Affordable Care Act under the expanded Medi-Cal program, and that program is discontinued, then people who are on Medi-Cal without regard to their assets, because under the expanded Medi-Cal program, you could have money in the bank above a $2,000 figure and still get Medi-Cal. But when you die, that all of that you own at the time of your death, up to the time this new law went into effect, would be subject to recovery.
All of your assets, you're saying?
Yeah, under the old law.
Under the old law, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Peter, what under the new law can we now expect, effective January 1st, 2017? What if someone dies now after January 1st, 2017? What's the situation there?
Well, it used to be that the state could recover from just about anything you owned, any kind of property. And that has been greatly narrowed. For the new California law, it is only things that are recovered or are required to be recovered under federal law that that are subject to recovery. So for one thing, we've had a back and forth with the state about what constitutes something called the probate estate. And what we've gotten from the state now is a ruling. First, it's informal, although it's based on the actual new text of the law, that they will only go after things that are subject to a formal probate proceeding. In other words, if your assets are in a living trust, they could not be recovered. Mm-hmm. If your assets are held in a payable on death bank account or securities account, they cannot be recovered. If you own a house with someone else in joint tenancy, it cannot be recovered. Only those things that actually have to go to a formal probate would be subject to recovery. That is a monstrous change, and a very good monster, I might say. That's
a good. The good monster has shown up.
Why it's important for anybody who is on the Medi-Cal program, who likely would be subject to recovery otherwise, if they have their property in a will, that's going to be subject to probate administration. So it's important to, you know, do some estate planning to avoid Medi-Cal recovery.
Let me do this. I think it's very important early in the program. I hope all of you have a pen or pencil and a piece of paper, because I want to let you know what the website is for Kanner, so that you can see how you can get this booklet that Kanner has put together. It's entitled The New Medical Recovery Laws, Effective January 1st, 2017. The website for Kanner, if you'd like to jot this down, please, www.kanner.org. And if you go to that, you'll find out how you can get the booklet. Also, if you go to that website, on your computer, you can actually access the booklet and read it on your computer.
Yeah, or they can download it, yeah.
And you can download it from your computer, and it's actually... The booklet itself is 12 pages in length, and it's very, very helpful. So let me then ask you this, generally speaking. Peter, in your preparing me for this program, you said, Chuck, a major point anyone on Medi-Cal can take these steps to avoid recovery in the future. What essentially is that?
Chuck, that's an invitation to anyone who might be on Medi-Cal either now or in the future to start looking at what the devices are so that, for instance, they won't end up in a probate. For instance, if you have a house of some substantial value, you might want to consider a simple living trust. It would no longer be necessary to go to some of these very complex arrangements that some of my attorney colleagues have been supporting to get people to use irrevocable, what we call the defective grantor trust, unless there are very special circumstances now having to do with having to sell the house in the future. But if you own a house and it's in a living trust, you're on Medi-Cal, you're in a nursing home, you have a $400,000 claim against your estate because you've been at Shady Acres for 8 years, and you die, and the only thing you own at that time is in your living trust, the state cannot recover from that. Now, there are other points of the law that are important to know. For instance, let's say all you have is a mobile home. Now, the mobile home, these days, a mobile home could be $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 in value.
Mm-hmm.
But under the law, there's a whole division in the probate code that treats things like mobile homes, cars, boats. Let's say that you live on a houseboat that's worth $300,000, but that boat is registered with the Department of Motor Vehicles under the provisions of the law. That would be exempt from recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's really incumbent on folks when they're on Medi-Cal, they don't necessarily have to come to see a lawyer, but they they should start by reading that booklet that you were talking about a minute ago, having their kids read it and say, look, Mom or Dad, here's what you might want to do. Some of these things they can do without coming to see lawyers. Otherwise, they certainly want to get some kind of estate plan in place that will avoid a formal probate. They could have bank accounts, for instance, that, or even a house of small value that does not come up to the $150,000 cutoff. There's a whole part of the probate code that covers that kind of property and does not require going to a full probate. If you can avoid that, you can avoid recovery completely.
If you have, in your estate, now your estate, the person is deceased, there was a will, there's now a probate, what's the consequence there? Give us a simple example if you can, Peter.
Well, let's say it's an estate of relatively small value, and they go and they open a probate, and then they discover that, you know, we really don't need a court order to get rid of this asset. We can pass it on using these informal procedures in the probate code. Then they can pull it out and they go use the informal procedures. We won't go through all the legal mumbo jumbo about mm-hmm. them, but mm-hmm. they're easy to find and avoid a formal probate. Let's take worst case now, Chuck. They have a house and it turns out that the house is worth more than $150,000. It was in the name of the person who died. That person was not married, because there's a big, big, big exception now. Used to be that under the old law, if you were married, the state could not pursue a claim during the time that your spouse was still alive. Ah, but once the spouse died, they could come after whatever the deceased person had left to the spouse,
mm-hmm.
And that was still in the spouse's name, when the spouse passed away. Well, that's been changed now, so that if you die survived by a spouse, there is no recovery. So maybe this is an invitation for wedding bells to break out in all the nursing homes of California.
Well, it's also important to note it's not just surviving spouses, it's registered domestic partners. And it doesn't matter when the Medi-Cal spouse died, whether before or after January 17th, there is no more recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as long as the surviving spouse made it into 2017,
right.
We're cool. That's right. It's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. And registered domestic partners and surviving spouses, from now on, no recovery.
So, for example, if the surviving spouse dies after January 1st, 2017, the home is in the surviving spouse's name, and the surviving spouse, let's say by way of will, has left the home to his or her son or daughter or children, you're saying that that is not subject to recovery?
Well, that wouldn't be subject to recovery anyway, because their surviving spouse isn't on Medi-Cal.
Okay.
Right?
Let's say the surviving...
My spouse is in a nursing home, and he's on Medi-Cal, and he died in November 2016.
Yeah.
Before the law changed.
Right.
Our concern was, come January 1, 2017, when the law goes into effect and there's no more recovery on surviving spouses or registered domestic partners, would that still apply? And they're saying, yes. Regardless of where your Medi-Cal spouse died, there's no more recovery from surviving spouses or registered domestic partners on or after January
1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the critical thing, Chuck, it wouldn't matter when the spouse who was on Medi-Cal died, as long as the surviving spouse made it into 2017. And I've had cases where the Medi-Cal spouse has died 10, 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
the surviving spouses are still alive.
But if and, the survivor,
I'm not sure how we prove that. You know, when we send the notice of death in, do we have a picture that we send in of the surviving spouse with this that morning's New York Times or something like that? I'm not sure how we do that.
Peter, let me then ask you this, Peter and Pat. Let me ask you this: if the surviving spouse, who's alive right now, dies this year or next year, but is also on Medi-Cal, what's the consequence there? And we have a house now in the surviving spouse.
Well, they want to do something to protect their estate. Same thing that Peter went through. You want to do something to protect your estate.
You
from
want to
probate.
Put it in a trust, possibly.
Just protect it from probate administration. However, you want to do it.
What if you make a gift to your child or children?
Well, you can do that.
You can do that, mm-hmm. And that's not subject to recovery.
Well, you have tax implications.
Well,
there.
Yeah,
I mean, there
would be IRS tax implications, long-term gain, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Let me take a brief moment to just let people know about. We're doing, by the way, this program on Wednesday, February 8th in San Francisco. And in a few minutes, I will give you all our toll-free number that you can call. Let me give it to you very quickly if you want to jot it down. In just a few minutes, I'll invite you to call in 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. But I'd like you all to know that on Wednesday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, we'll have our annual or our yearly program on tips to prepare your federal income tax return. So if you're trying to organize yourself to prepare your tax return, I hope you join us. Also, that same evening, February 22nd, we'll have both a Call a CPA night, when CPAs here will be at the station, as well as our monthly Call a Lawyer night with lawyers here at the station, from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, and you can call in to speak with either a CPA or an attorney off the air, no obligation on your part. You might want to jot down the number. Again, this is for February 22nd, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. That's on February 22nd for Call a CPA and Call a Lawyer night. So keep that in mind. All right, let's do this. Peter, let me come back and let people know who you are on this program with me. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about the new Medi-Cal recovery laws for 2017. In the studio with me is Pat McGinnis, Executive Director of California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, CANNR. Her website is, www.canhr.org. And again, that booklet is the new Medi-Cal Recovery Laws 1-1-2017. And my other guest, who has been a great supporter of consumer learning and education, is Peter Stern, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, former chair of the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar. Here's a question that someone has posed to us, and I'd like to ask you about it right now. Our monthly Social Security check comes in the mail, often late from 1 to 4 days. There is usually enclosed with the check a reminder to allow the monies be deposited electronically. Can we be made to participate in auto deposit when we prefer to continue in a time-tested way of checking the mail? This is way off base, but Peter, what would you suggest there?
Well, I frankly think they're much better off having an electronic deposit. But I think the administration has the power to require that, but I don't really know what the underlying law is.
I thought they did require automatic. I thought that came to be about 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, maybe it is. You know what I think in light of that question, what I feel is, in my role as the host producer of this program, being a lawyer for a long, long time, being a consumer advocate, a protector of consumers, being a deputy DA in consumer protection for 32 years. When we get a question like that, I think the thing for you to do, if I may suggest this to you, is call your local bar association, local county bar association, make an appointment to speak with an attorney for half an hour. It'll cost you maybe $25, $35. with minor exception in the state of California. And this is the thing to do. And one of the other things I want to let you know about, if you're looking, and Peter and Pat are trying to give you some advice of what to do so that your property cannot be recovered by the state with respect to the recovery law. And I think what you might want to do is check with a certified specialist in estate planning. The Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar has 11 certified specialties. Here's the website for the board, www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to, up into your upper left corner of the screen of your computer and click on legal specialist. You'll find out who they are in your county. And this is the thing to do to protect yourself. It's much better to invest a little bit of money to learn what your potential problems may be and what you can do about it. And I think it's something that you need to seriously consider. What medical services provided are still subject to recovery, however, under the new law?
Well, long-term care services, Chuck, and there's a particular provision, and Pat, please jump in here to make this more specific. If it's been determined that you are in if you're over age 55 and you're in a nursing home, those services are recoverable. If you are of any age in a nursing home and it's been determined that after having an opportunity for a fair hearing that you will not be able to return home, then those services would be covered. If you have one of the waiver programs, of which there are, I think, what, 8 or 9 of them now, Pat, where you're getting services that are equivalent to long-term care, but you're not in a nursing home, those services would be subject to recovery. But the normal mom-and-pop medical care through the local doctor services that were recoverable up to now are no longer recoverable under the law. But there is a controversy about a very important part of in-home services.
Peter, can I just interrupt? It's not much of a controversy at this point because the department submitted their state plan amendment and they made it very clear they are not going to be recovering from personal care services under the in-home supportive services program. So I don't want to confuse people
That is news to me. I thought that was still up.
Well, you didn't read the last Legal Network newsletter.
I'm a bad guy.
let me make sure I understand this. You're saying under the current law, the new law, that if someone is in a nursing home and does not go back to his or her own home, the cost of being in the nursing home is still recoverable by the state?
That's correct.
Under this new law?
Well, it's always been.
All right. What about All right. Whether you've been in a nursing home prior to 1/1/2017 or after 1/1/2017, it's still recoverable.
Yeah, that's under the federal law. They have to recover for those services.
Yeah, but again, keep in mind, Chuck, that's only if there are assets they can reach.
Okay.
For instance, if the assets are all in a trust, it wouldn't matter what medical care they got. They still can't be recovered.
So if someone is smart enough, that is, the average person is smart enough to get some good legal advice and puts all of their assets, the home, the bank accounts, bonds, stocks, etc., in a trust, none of those assets are recoverable?
Can't have those kinds of assets and be eligible for Medi-Cal. It's important for people to know that in order to be eligible for Medi-Cal, whether in a nursing home or for somebody who's aged and disabled at home, your assets are limited to $2,000 countable assets. So you're not going to have people who die and recovery is going to find a $100,000 bank account. That's a rare, rare thing.
Okay.
Maybe they didn't declare it. But for the most part, what people have generally is their home, a car, mobile homes. Those are the kinds of, and I've dealt with hundreds of Medi-Cal recovery cases. And it's generally the home.
What if the home is worth $500,000 and it's paid free and clear?
That doesn't matter. They can't recover, as Peter said, as long as you've taken steps to prevent probate administration.
So again, Peter, the steps that would be taken, generally speaking, are what to avoid probate? What would you do?
Well, I mean, if we're looking at a house of any substantial value,
half a million. Let's say it's worth half a million, free and clear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'd certainly, want to see that in a trust. Although, Chuck, there's an exception we haven't talked about.
All right.
Which is that if you have a house, and the value of your house, even if you end up in a probate, that's and the correct. Value of your house is less than one half of the median price of a house in your county, that house would be considered that you benefit from a hardship, and the state would not be able to recover from your probate if the value of your house is less than one half of the median price of the other houses in your county.
Well, that's kind of complicated. Can you give us a simple example of what you mean by that? And we've nearly come to the end of the
Chuck, real quick.
Let's say you
live in my county, Santa Clara County. Median price of a home here is about $1 million.
Yeah.
And you happen to live in an area where the houses do not have high value. Your house has a fair market value of $480,000.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't take any steps to avoid a probate. You die, your estate is probated, the probate referee comes in with the ruling that your house under the inventory is worth $480,000, and the state looks up what the median price is from their third-party vendor and sees that the median price is $1 million. Well, half of that is $500,000. So your house, even though you're in a probate, is worth less than one-half the median of the houses in the county, and so that's considered a hardship, and they cannot recover.
Well, but that's not it's not automatic, and that's something that's very important for people to know. There's hardship waivers. You can apply for a hardship waiver, and that's one of the criteria that they can use when you apply for hardship waivers. So that's not automatic, but it's very important,
mm-hmm.
particularly for the low-value counties where people's houses aren't worth that much.
I feel if you're in this kind of a situation, and now I'm speaking to all of you listening to the program and are involved with Medi-Cal, I think it's very wise for you to have at least an initial investment to meet with an attorney in your area. We have come now to the point where I want to give you our toll-free number and invite you to call in and speak with my really incredibly experienced guests in this area. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We are doing this program on Wednesday evening, February 8th of 2017. And if you are listening to the live program, you're certainly welcome to call in and speak with my guests. One of the things I want to let all of you know about is that the entire hour of the program, we are live in the Bay Area for a full hour. We're live on the Internet for a full hour at www.kalw.org. The entire program is uplinked to the NPR satellite for distribution nationally. And so if you're listening to this program on a different day other than February 8th, obviously my guests will not be available. But the entire program is available as a free podcast at www.kalw.org/RSS. www.kalw.org/RSS. My guests are Peter Stern, a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, Patricia McGinnis, Executive Director of California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. Pat, you wanted to tell me something on the back of the booklet. What was it, please?
I wanted to tell people that we do have an 800 number, and we can answer questions for people if they have.
Well, let's give it. Let's give the 800 number.
1-800-474-1116.
Repeat it.
1-800-474-1116.
Now, before we take any call at all, and we do have a number of people who want to speak to you, support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. Every county in California has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to put you together with an attorney who's experienced in the area. And with minor exception, throughout California, for a half an hour consultation, you will pay $25 to $35. It's a great investment, and I highly recommend that you consider that. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And again, I want to give you the websites both for the California Board of Legal Specialization, for certified specialists, and for a whole bunch of different pamphlets in those 11 areas. It's www.calbar.ca.gov. And for the National Board of Trial Advocacy, it has several certifications, and you can get in touch with them through www.nbtalawyers.org. All right, we're going to start with Eve. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I have a slight sort of an upside-down situation from what you're talking about, and I'm interested to know how this law, new change in the law, affects it. I have a grown son who is now 45, who had a severe stroke, is in a nursing home, and we really have no particular anticipation that he's going to, you know, go back to living a normal adult life. He's probably going to be, likely anyway, in a nursing facility. He has long-term, I mean, for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
And he has long-term care, Medi-Cal. He himself had few assets of any value at all. No house, no car, you know, nothing, et cetera. And we're not, we're far from wealthy ourselves, but also it's very likely that... utterly likely that he will outlive us.
Yeah.
So he's the only child, and I just sort of don't have an idea of what that means in terms of inheritance and passing along from this direction. Obviously, in normal circumstances,
so
he would inherit when my husband and I died.
So what would he be inheriting, a home or various other assets? Eve?
Yeah, but nothing of any particular... huge value.
I'm sorry, say that again. Nothing that what?
Nothing of particularly huge value.
Well, special needs trust. Peter.
Yep.
Peter, I would say a special needs trust, right?
I would. And there, in your plan, ma'am, with you and your spouse, you should probably set something up so that when the last of you dies, and if you want to make sure that your son is taken care of, you leave assets to him to be managed by someone in a special needs trust. That way, the assets would not count for him and would not make him ineligible for Medi-Cal.
Okay, that's...
And neither
he
you...
He does have a daughter.
You know, Eve, you're getting it. It's more complicated. I really... You have not seen a... Eve, you have not seen a lawyer. Is that right?
No, not yet.
Yeah. Let me make a suggestion. I'm not trying to find work for lawyers, believe it or not. That's not my role here. My role is to try to... Yeah, my role is to serve you. I have been a deputy DA for 32 years in consumer protection. I haven't been on an hourly wage, et cetera, by any consumers. And so what I think you need to do, in light of what you're saying, and now you're also now saying you have a daughter and you're concerned. Please don't interrupt. Eve, please don't interrupt. Let me finish, if you would, because we have a lot of people who want to talk to my guests. I think at this point it would be critical for you, you apparently are in Oakland, to begin with by contacting the Alameda County Bar Association. Start with an initial meeting with an attorney who does some kind of estate planning. I highly recommend, if you are concerned about whether or not you might somehow leave your daughter out by leaving stuff to your grandson, then I really think it probably would make a lot of sense for you to contact the California Board of Legal Specialization and make an appointment to meet with a certified specialist in estate planning.
Could I add, Chuck?
Yes, please.
Our organization, if you call our 800 number, we have a State Bar Certified Lawyer Referral Service. It's the only lawyer referral service in California certified by the State Bar for Medi-Cal issues, long-term care Medi-Cal. And Peter is on our advisory board, in fact. So we have... So you can give us a call, too, just to spend a little more time finding out what the problem is.
Okay. That was the 800 number, 474-1116?
That's right. Yeah, just that's give us a call.
Yeah. Please please do, Eve. And thanks for calling, and good luck to you. Take care now. Bye-bye. Sarah, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Of course.
So forgive me, because you may have mentioned this. I'm not sure. I joined in the radio a few minutes late, but basically I'm 25. I have two parents that were on Medi-Cal for about 2 years before their insurance changed, and they were both over the age of 55 while receiving the Medi-Cal benefits. So through a happy coincidence, I guess, I randomly stumbled upon this estate recovery issue or thing, and looked into it, and haven't been able to find answer to my question. My question is, they were receiving the benefits for 2 years. What, as their children, myself and my brother, are we liable for once they pass, if anything?
Are they both still alive,
yes,
Sarah?
Yes.
Okay. Are they both on Medi-Cal right now?
They are no longer on Medi-Cal.
No longer. They were on Medi-Cal. Okay. Peter, what response do you have for Sarah on that?
Well, first of all, under the new law, they have an opportunity to get at a very low cost of a kind of a printout of what their Medi-Cal benefits have been, what the state is holding on the ledger for them. That's new in the new law. And then, you know, they could plan. Obviously, if they were both on Medi-Cal, then one of them will probably survive the other, so one of them will not have a surviving spouse, so there might be recovery. Then the issue would be, what assets do they own? Do they have a large enough estate to make a living trust worthwhile? If they have a very modest estate, they don't own real estate, for instance, it may be that even when the survivor dies, the total would be less than the $150,000, and so they could avoid a probate on the death of the second spouse, and so there would be no recovery anyway. It's really a question of sitting down, getting out a pencil and some paper, and figuring out what all they have. Maybe they want to get a hold of the, get the brochure. Pat in the brochure is the description about how to get the accounting from the state provided.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so they can.
And you can also, it's on our website, and you can give us a call.
Let me give the website again, because I think it's very important. Do you have something to write with, Sarah?
I do.
Yeah, the website for CANHR, C-A-N-H-R, which is the abbreviation for California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, is www.canhr, C-A-N-H-R.org.
Got it. I have perused that, so I will double.
There's a feedback form on there. You can send us an email, and we respond to emails every day. So you can also, we can send you whatever you need. And the basic, what Peter is saying is, your parents need to do some planning.
Yeah,
they can avoid recovery. There's no question about it.
Let me give you the 800 number again, Sarah, because I want you to have that also. It's 800-474-1116.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so very much.
All right, take care. Nice to have you call us. All right, Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for such a valuable program. I had two questions, but if I only have time for one, the first one would be, are devices to protect Medi-Cal for a working disabled person, such as the 401k under the 250% working disabled program, or an ABLE account recoverable?
Wow.
Good question about ABLE account.
Very good question, yeah.
Right now, ABLE... Under the law, the federal law, it is subject to recovery, and that's being modified. As I believe there's a bill in the legislature in California right now to modify that, and I don't have it in front of me. It's somewhere between AB 150 and AB 200, I believe.
What do you suggest on that question, Peter? What do you suggest that Mark goes next? What should he do?
Well, I guess he's with regard to the 401k, a retirement account it is not subject to recovery.
It
as
is
long,
not.
As long as you name a beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
And okay.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And the ABLE accounts generally are of relatively small value anyway, but you can only contribute up to $14,000 a year to an ABLE account. And that may change in the future with the ability to transfer money from different kinds of accounts into an ABLE account. But I do not know. That law will be subject to change in California, but I don't know when or whether the bill will go through. It is presently in the legislature.
But to answer your question, right now ABLE accounts are subject to recovery. 401ks and retirement accounts are not, as long as they don't revert to the estate and you name a beneficiary.
For those of us who don't know what an ABLE account is, can you tell us what it is simply?
Peter can.
Peter, yep. What is an ABLE account?
Well, it's an account to be set up for a person who is disabled before age 26. Contributions to it cannot exceed $14,000 a year total. And the cap for someone who is on SSI would be $100,000. The cap for someone who is not on SSI would be the 529 cap, which is actually quite high. It's well over $300,000, I believe. But it would take many, many, many years to get that much into an ABLE account. The ABLE account can provide expenditures without the limit. You know, since you're not handicapped by the SSI asset limit if you have an ABLE account. So it is a possible way to enhance the autonomy of a disabled person who can have money that's under his or her direct control, which cannot be done if the money is in a special needs trust. That is my 60-second summary.
Mark, if you're still there, what's your second question?
Oh, thank you so much. That was very informative. My second question was, given how rickety and really inadequate the funding for Medi-Cal is, what impact on its current future viability will this change in the law have, do you think?
Well, it's Medi-Cal recovery is minuscule compared to the overall Medi-Cal budget. And that was one of the fiscal arguments that we were able to convince Governor Brown. It's about $31 million, half of which goes back to the federal government.
Oh, I see. Thank you very much.
Okay, Mark. Thanks very much for calling. All right. Let me, again, for those of you who want to learn more, I think it would make a lot of sense for you to go to the website for Kanner, and that's www.kanner.org, or give them a call, 800-474-1116, 800-474-1116. Also, we have, if you'd like to call in on the program and speak to my guests, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We're doing this program live on the evening of February 8, 2017, and I invite you, anyone who has a question in the area of Medi-Cal or Medi-Cal long-term care, or recovery, if you would like to call in, ask a question, make a comment, get some response from my guests, this is the time to do it. And so don't wait for another 5 or 10 minutes because we will be gone. We'll be gone, and we don't want that. One of the things that we did when we were getting ready to go on the air, Pat and Peter, we talked about someone having a home and the issue of a lien on the home. And let's say someone owed, let's say, on Medi-Cal, with regard to the Medi-Cal recovery system, owed $100,000. And the state wanted to put a lien on the home. Would you talk a little bit about that, Peter, and the significance of the new law compared to what the old law was?
Yeah, of course, Chuck. Now, under the old law, the state could grant you a lien, and so if you agreed, the state, instead of having to surrender your home for the recovery, you could have a lien on the home instead of paying them back, but the lien would accrue interest at 7% per year. Now, the new law provides that a voluntary post-death lien would accrue interest at the rate equal to the average annual rate earned on investments in the surplus money investment fund, or 7%, whichever is lower. And the last time I checked, the interest rate on the state's surplus money investment fund was 0.058% per year.
That's less than 1%.
Less than 1%.
Mm.
So on a $100,000 lien, the interest accrued would be about $580 a year.
Per year, as opposed to $7,000 per year under the previous law.
That's correct.
Could okay. I also mention that there are some exemptions to recovery? Regardless of how the property is held when you die, if you're survived now by a surviving spouse or a registered domestic partner, no recovery. If you're survived by a disabled child of any age, you can be survived by a 55, 60-year-old disabled child, and there's no recovery.
But with regard to Eve, that does not include a grandson. Is that right?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
She was talking about her son anyway. But if you are survived by a...
No, I'm sorry. I heard her say grandson who was disabled and...
And a daughter, yeah.
Yeah, she has a daughter, but the grandson was the one who was disabled. But go ahead.
And if you are survived by a minor child under the age of 21, there's no recovery. In addition to that, so the first thing you look at, you know, how is my property held? Do I have any exempt survivors? Then you have you can apply for a hardship waiver. So if you've cared for your parents for the last 2 years, it doesn't even have to be a relative. If I've cared for these people, this person, for the last 2 years, and I provided care that enabled them to stay at home and out of a nursing home, that could be a hardship. There are still a number of different hardship waivers, and we've won many of them over the years. So even if your property wasn't held, because there's still a lot of estate recovery going on for people who died prior to this new law.
Yes, right? Yes.
So people don't give up. Take a look and see what your rights are regarding hardship waivers.
Pat, let me ask you this. Your office is in San Francisco. Are what you are providing, the kind of services, the kind of information, is this something that anyone in the state of California, by either going to your website or calling you on the 800 number, can benefit from?
We have offices in South Pasadena and in San Francisco.
I see, okay.
And we do trainings all over the state of California.
All right.
And anybody can access any of our information on our website, our 800 number, and we have just call and ask to speak to an advocate, and they're all pretty familiar with the Medi-Cal issues.
Very good. All right. So that's for those of you who might need some information. There are advocates, Sue Kanner, who are available to you. Again, that number, 1-800-474-1116. And we have a few minutes left of the program, and we have Marilyn now joining us on Your Legal Rights. Marilyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I want to ask about a house in Phoenix that I own with my sister. We were left it together, so we each have half, and I have never put it in a trust. But Peter Stern mentioned a simple trust instead of a complex trust.
Well, that's correct. But now, how do you hold your property? Are you and your sister tenants in common or joint tenants?
I have no idea.
Oh, you better learn. Hey, come on now, Marilyn.
Take a look at your deed. And, it's an interesting question. I don't know how they would value out-of-state property for the exception rule. And, of course, your property in Arizona would be subject to administration under Arizona law, not California law.
So I would have to do something with Arizona law, not California law. That's what I was trying to...
Where is your sister? Where does she live, Marilyn?
She lives in the house.
Oh, she lives there in Phoenix. Well, I think it makes sense, frankly, for both of you to agree that probably... And Peter and Pat, please correct me if I'm wrong on this. It seems to me it would make a lot of sense for your sister, for you and your sister to agree that she... seek the advice of an estate planning attorney in Phoenix and look into this so that you know what's going on. What would you say to that, Peter?
Absolutely. And, it should be done by an attorney there. I would not draw a deed myself for out-of-state property. Making a mistake.
Yeah.
Go to a local lawyer there and consider, have the deed examined. If it's joint tenancy, then whichever of you dies first, the property goes to the survivor. And if you're on Medi-Cal, Maryland, and you die before your sister and it's joint tenant property, there's no recovery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, Marilyn. Thank you very much for calling. Glad you did. Again, we have a few minutes left in the program, doing this on Wednesday evening, February 8th. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. I'll tell you, I've been an attorney for a long time and a consumer advocate in my role, both as a private attorney as well as the last 32 years as a deputy DA in San Mateo County doing consumer protection. This I find to be a complicated area, and frankly, I feel it would be worth your while if you're faced with some estate issues, whatever it may be, whether it's Medi-Cal or some other thing, and you're concerned about leaving property to your child, children, or whatever. I think it makes a lot of sense for you to seek the advice, in my opinion, of a certified specialist in estate planning, and again, try to find someone in your county, anywhere in the state of California. Go to the website, www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the upper left corner of your screen where you'll see legal specialists. Click that on. You'll find your county, and then go to the legal specialist area that you are concerned with. If you are concerned with something to do with Medi-Cal recovery laws or Medi-Cal or other questions you might have about Medi-Cal or Medi-Cal for long-term care, Kanner has specialized in this for many years. As a matter of fact, Pat McGinnis founded this. What was it, 35? How many years ago, Pat?
1983
or 84, everybody. And she's been doing this very successfully, helping a lot of consumers. So here's the website again for Kanner if you need some direction, www.kanner.org. The 800 number is 800-474-1116, 800-474-1116. Take advantage of this. This is available to you, and I'd like to take another call or two before the end of the program. I do want to alert you again for those of you who would like to get involved with our year program on February 26th, Tips to Prepare Your Federal Income Tax Return. We will be doing a live program on Wednesday, February 26th at 7 p.m. Pacific time. We'll also have available to you off the air to speak with a CPA or an attorney, because that same evening we will be doing a Call a CPA night and our monthly Call a Lawyer night, where we'll have CPAs here, we'll have lawyers here on February 22nd from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time. You might want to jot down the number. No obligation on your part. This is open to anybody, wherever you may be, to call in. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. That's for Wednesday evening, February 22nd, from 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time. All right, we have Bob. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. The information you're giving us is just amazing. I really appreciate it.
What's your question, Bob?
On this thing where you calculate the median, stay below half the median, does it matter if you have equity in that property or not at that point?
No, it would be based on its fair market value as determined by the probate appraiser. Each county has one or more people who are appointed to be probate appraisers for the county and for any probate in that county. So the probate referee would do a report, and then that's what the state would use to determine the fair market value. And it doesn't matter whether it's mortgaged or not.
Peter, I think he's asking about the homestead of modest value. Is that correct, the 50%?
That's a good question, yes.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about. So the homestead of modest value, the home, would be appraised by the probate referee. And that value would be compared with the whatever the median price is in that county. And if the home, as it is appraised by the probate referee, is less than 50% of that median price, then the state cannot recover. Now, Pat's point is that you do have to make a hardship application at that point.
Well, my other point is that the state hasn't agreed that the process on how they're going to what system they're going to use to determine the homestead of modest value, and that's
Well, I think they have. I mean, they will use a third-party vendor, and you could challenge that, of course, if you wanted to, because there are California Association of Realtors puts out information every month on the median price of all homes in every county in California. So if there is a discrepancy between what the state is claiming and what you think is appropriate, that certainly would be subject to a judicial proceeding if it actually got to that point.
And in your question, Bob, as to about the encumbrances, I asked them if they would please deduct encumbrances, but they said that was not.
They would not. So in other words, if you have a home worth $300,000,
mm-hmm.
and you still owe $200,000, that doesn't make any difference. Is that right?
No, that's correct. Not for this particular homestead of modest value criteria, no. They're not going to take the encumbrances into consideration.
So they take the fair market value of the home, $300,000,
mm-hmm.
and they apply the potential recovery as to the $300,000?
No, what Peter was describing, the 50% homestead of modest value reduction.
If that $300,000 home is in a county where the median price is $1 million, like Santa Clara County, San Mateo County, then that the median price is more than twice what that home is worth when the probate referee presents her figures to the court. Then that home should be considered a homestead of modest value,
mm-hmm.
and one could apply for a hardship waiver. And this, under the law, the state would have to waive its recovery as to that home.
Okay, now that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, I hope Bob, that's helpful to you.
Is there a difference between what you're talking about in terms of homestead of modest value, I think you said, and homesteading in order to protect your assets? Which I did.
There is a difference, but for the state of California, you do not have to have a formal homestead declaration in order to benefit from this exception.
We are just about out of time for the program, unfortunately, for Susan, who would like to speak with you. Susan, I'm sorry, we have just about run out of time. What I can say is if you have other questions with respect to Medi-Cal, certainly, Kanner has this fine booklet you can get, and they also have knowledgeable people you can talk to. The 800 number for Kanner is 800-474-1116. The website is www.canhr.org. I want to thank you both very much for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure having you both back on the program. Peter Stern, specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, office in Palo Alto. Thanks, Peter, very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Chuck. Always a good time to be on the program.
And Pat McGinnis, executive director of California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, with the main office in San Francisco. Pat, thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Great to have you both here.
My pleasure.
Next time on Your Legal Rights, we're going to talk about drones, everybody. This year, it's estimated that 2.3 million drones, that's unmanned aircraft or unmanned aircraft, will be sold. The discussion of the Federal Aviation Administration's regulations for the public safety in the flying of drones, both commercially and non-commercially. My guest will be Ed Page, a certified criminal law trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy and a commercial pilot. And Ron Rohde, a patent law attorney, arbitrator of Lemon Law disputes, and an instrument-rated private pilot. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Vinnie.